Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. It is my absolute pleasure to bring back a longtime ally. He joined me. I looked at the in the library. He joined me in 2011. We had a great conversation about Codex Alimentarius, and it's in the library. We had it as the blast for the past last week. His name is Scott Tipps. He is a practicing attorney who has an international practice. He for many decades, he's lived on both sides of the pond, as well as in Latin America. And so very knowledgeable about Europe, about the United States and Latin America, all three. And Scott is the president and general counsel of the National Health Federation, a wonderful health freedom group, the oldest health freedom group, as far as I know, in the United States. Their website is thenhf.com. And he has been in the trenches fighting so hard to protect us from really international standards being used to assert control of our food and vitamin system. So, Scott, thank you so much for coming back on the Solari Report. I got an email from Corey Lynn the other day, and she said, "What the heck is Codex?" And I thought, we got to get the man back on, because you are the go-to person. So
thank you so much for
coming back. And thank you for everything you've been doing, what you've been doing for the last two. Well, you know, I get the magazine. So
yeah, it's been my first Codex meeting was June 2000 in Berlin, Germany. And that was the Nutrition Codex Committee. And I actually had my first victory there, where I kind of forced the U.S. delegation to rescind a motion where they had or an action where they had wanted deleted from the final committee report that the U.S. government supports the right of consumers to access supplements. And she had actually asked for that to be removed, and I sort of ambushed the lead delegate, Elizabeth Getley, there in the hallways. My very first meeting, you know, I was lucky to know which door to go into at that stage. And I said to her, you know, if you do this, NHF is going to advertise to the world what you've done. You need to put that back in. When we go back in, tell the chairman you want it put back in. And the funniest thing about it, though, Catherine, was listening in on my little talk with Elizabeth Yetley, the head of the U.S. delegation, and by the way, an FDA employee, was another person whom shall remain nameless. But he, in any event, was working with the Natural Products Association, although it had a different name at that time. I think it was NNFA, National Nutritional Foods Association. And he was there monitoring it for them. And he was telling me, "Oh, Scott, it doesn't matter. Let it go."
Right there.
And I pointed at, he was a tall drink of water. And I pointed my finger right at his middle, you know, and I said, "You know, the people who send you here would not appreciate you saying that. You should be supporting me." And then I turned back to Elizabeth Yetley and I said, "Really, we're going to make you guys look so bad if you don't get it back in." So then the coffee break ended. She went back into the meeting, and she was very clever. You know, she's a smart woman. And so instead of saying, "Oh, I made a mistake, I want it back in," she said, "No, I want a mistake. I made a mistake. I meant to say move it from paragraph, whatever, 19 to paragraph 23. And would you please put it in that paragraph?" So she didn't look foolish, you know.
You it's trench warfare.
Yeah.
They fight for every word, every comma, every inch.
You do. And that was the first victory. Then the funny thing is that
you got to stop. We got to tell everybody what Codex is.
You're right. Because otherwise they will be lost, and maybe they already are. So Codex Alimentarius is a commission, and it was created under the auspices of the FAO and the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the Food and Agricultural Organization, which are themselves spawned of the United Nations. So about 85% of the budget comes from the FAO, 15% from the WHO. Actually, there's a smattering of money that's given by the US, UK, EU, some other countries. And the basic purpose of Codex Alimentarius is exactly what the name says. Codex Alimentarius really is Latin for food code. So it only deals with food. A lot of people think, oh, it deals with medicine or it deals with electromagnetic therapies or who knows what. But no, it does not. It deals strictly with food. And so that's the approach we take. And the countries that are represented there, in who are member states, they call them, are represent 99.9% of the world's population. So the coverage is quite comprehensive. And the there are also organizations, nonprofit organizations like the National Health Federation, but actually I shouldn't say that because they aren't like us other than they're nonprofit. A lot of these are front groups for Monsanto. A lot of them are front groups for the aspartame manufacturers, for Bayer, for DuPont Chemicals, and so on. Merck has a front group there called Animals, Health for Animals. Right. And I call it Drugs for Animals. Anyway, any organization that's accredited by Codex has the right to speak out at the meeting. And I take full advantage of that. So the National Health Federation is the only health freedom organization accredited by Codex and able to participate fully in the meetings, meaning we can speak out, we can submit written documents, we can interact in real time with the other delegates at the meetings. Now, this has been changed a little bit since the pandemic because the COVID pandemic, because we're now meeting by Zoom meetings exclusively, although that could change starting next year. But the purpose of Codex, the ostensible purpose of Codex, is to create food guidelines, food codes of practice, and food standards that all the nation states, all the member states will adhere to. And the reason this is so important at Codex is because if a country wants to challenge a food standard that was created, let's take an example, the GM Silpaterol, the Arnold Schwarzenegger drug for animals, which the Americans, the Western, the New World gives to its animals to make them more muscly and less fat, you know, because leaner cuts of beef and pork and all of that, they command a higher value on the consumer market. So they can get more money for it. So it's all about money. And they want to push Zilpaterol fed animals in the EU market, in Russia, in China, in India. But all those countries forbid giving animals the sale of animals who have been given non-therapeutic drugs like Zilpaterol. Mm-hmm. And it's a very sensible, you know, health standard to have. And so the U.S. is unrelenting at trying to force this issue. And in fact, it's a battle that's still going on, but one that we've won so far, mainly thanks to NHF and also to the Russian Federation, actually. The problem is that if they get a standard, what the U.S. can do is go to the World Trade Organization and file a trade dispute against the EU / Russia / China / whomever is not allowing it and say, we have a problem. And the first question the WTO arbitration panel will do is say, well, it's a food item, so is there a Codex standard on this? And they'll go and look. And if there's a Codex standard that the U.S. is meeting the, you know, four corners of that standard, then they will rule against Russia, the EU, Norway, Switzerland, and they will force those countries to accept the food that is tainted by those standards. And that's why it's so important.
So we did a great Salieri report 2 years ago with Amy Benjamin, who's an attorney, on the use of international treaties to supersede constitution and sovereign laws. And to me, this is a perfect example of the compromise of international of sovereign law and country law by forcing, you know, if they can get something adopted that forces you to take food which is unacceptable for your health standards, you know, that's a backdoor into local control.
Absolutely. And I agree completely. And that's why NHF is fighting this at the global level. And we figure, why mess around at the local level? You know, the FDA is just going to roll over and do whatever Codex says. So why fight at a lower level, other than there are certain things that are drug-like things in the FDA purview, of course, that we have to fight on that's not covered by Codex. But the bottom line is, this is where the lines are drawn. And a lot of times, because the people who are representing the countries aren't, of course, people like you and me, who are truly interested in the health and even the health freedom of the citizens of that country. They're really just, you know, hourly paid or salary paid bureaucrats who oftentimes wouldn't know good health if it hit them over the head with a frying pan. So, and they're kind of stuck in their own worldview, which is not a very expansive one. So,
well, but it's also subject to extraordinary corporate pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there, Catherine, because those are the ones that lobby them the hardest,
right,
and offer them jobs afterwards. You know, we used to be really tight, NHF and me personally, with the Codex Secretariat, that is the leadership of at least the working engine of Codex. And then one day, Angela Trischker, she was with either WHO or FAO, WHO, I think, and she retired and she got a hefty sum of money. I think it was like in the five-figure monthly euro figure from a big either agricultural or pharmaceutical company. I can't remember now which. And it sort of rang alarm bells for us, and it showed the way forward for other Codex Secretariat people. Boy, if we're nice to these people, we'll get a job like Angela got.
Right.
I think it's actually Angelica, and like Angelica got. And it's just very seductive for a lot of people, and especially people who aren't firmly grounded in principles of either freedom or health.
Right.
But on the other hand, I have to say that there are some very principled delegation heads from various countries, certain countries, who aren't, you know, fooled or are seduced by the lure of the corporate money or the any of that, or their arguments. They see through them. And those are the ones that NHF is allied with. And it's not necessarily, they aren't necessarily the ones you might suspect. The worst ones are the Anglo-Saxon countries. Like, as I mentioned before, Australia, you know, is the absolute worst. New Zealand is a very close second. It's almost like Australia and New Zealand are the point men or women, actually, right, for the empire. You know, right, any, if you stumbled into a Codex meeting and listened to it and you didn't know a thing about it, all you'd have to do is take a position 180 degrees opposite to that of the Australian delegate. And 99 times out of 100, you'd be batting very, very high on the side of good and on the side of good health. And it's just amazing. It's so depressing in a way, because you see a lot of these people. But on the other hand, so here are the surprising countries, you know, the ones we've been told are all so evil. Iran, a lot of the times, takes a very strong position in favor of good health and health freedom. Russia, occasionally China, but they're being seduced by the money god. And so they flipped over on glyphosate and Roundup, and they used to be anti that. Now they're pro that. And the EU, at least in some areas, not on supplements, But on like aluminum in food and, you know, a lot of these additives that are very toxic in food, actually the EU's pretty good. The problem with the EU delegations is, with some exceptions, they are not very forceful. Right. So like on the Zilpaterol example I was giving, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger drug for animals, meat animals, they took a stance, but then they rolled over on the science. So it was left to NHF to stop this, because everyone else who supported it, you know, the Merck people who produced the drug, Zilpaterol and all of that, they were saying, hey, we have scientific consensus, so we should move forward, because even our opponents, the EU and Norway and Switzerland, they can see that we have good science behind it. So it was left to NHF. We were the only ones to say, and to keep saying, no, the science is bad, it's defective, you have downer animals who, pigs frothing at the mouth, and they then argue, well, it's not about the health of animals. Wait, I thought your organization was called Health for Animals. Did I get that wrong? You know, maybe we should call you Drugs for Animals instead of the name of your organization, rename it. But we were able to defeat it at two meetings so far, the Zilpaterol. But, you know, like Winston Churchill said, victory is never final. So they're bringing it up before the full commission, the parent body above the committees. And they're bringing it up in, I think it's November. So we'll have this battle to fight again.
So if you look at what you've been doing for many years, I mean, two plus decades.
Yeah.
This is an incredible effort to slow down and stop what is a very destructive central control of the food system.
It
coming top down, that overrides, you know, national law, local law, and can literally destroy our food supply. Now, let's hold that thought for a second, because while you've been doing, you know, I almost think of you as like the little Dutch boy with your finger in the dike for 20 years.
Pretty much.
20 years. So while you've been doing that, we see an incredible effort by WHO to assert central control. If they make more progress in that, we could be looking at something where they're just free to to continue to tighten up Codex in a way that could destroy the food supply.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100% with what you just said. But may I, before we go on along further down this path, I need to give you some credit, because when we made our arguments at the Chicago meeting in 2018, when we made the arguments last fall, in 2021, both times, in addition to our regular arguments that we had, I employed the idea you gave me of the ESG principles. Yeah, and I spoke out to the assembled delegates and I said, look, they're violating their ESG, the environmental social governance principles. As set forth in their very own Merck's own document on page 14, whatever the page was, I think it was 14. And Merck and Animals for Health, Drugs for Health for Animals, is it really Drugs for Animals? They were so livid that they in the U.S. and some of the West New World countries, you know, all the New World countries from Venezuela and Cuba to U.S. and Canada, they're all on the side of Merck. Anyway, they tried desperately to get that part out of the report, the final report about the ESG, and we beat them on it, and actually had at the last meeting, the Russians, we may not have succeeded the second time, but we did the first time at the committee meeting. The second time, I think they may have been successful getting it removed from the report, but the Russian Federation just laid into them on that.
And, fabulous.
Yeah, they were saying NHF's comments need to be in the report. And this, by the way, is very unusual because usually the countries don't defend the INGOs, the international non-governmental organizations like NHF, but they have, and we're incredibly outspoken at the meeting. And a lot of times people turn to us because, you know, we really call a spade and we say, this is what's it. I was the only one at that meeting of 600 people to accuse the chairman of the Codex Alimentarius Commission of favoritism on the Zilpaterol issue. Because every time someone spoke up against Zilpaterol, he had some sort of little answer and response to it. And if they spoke up in favor of Zilpaterol, he let that go.
So I really want people who are working to try and stop central control to integrate what people are telling the regulators versus what they're telling investors. And It doesn't surprise me that Merck got terribly upset because they don't like, you know, they're talking out of two sides of their mouth.
Yes.
It's multiple personality disorder.
Right.
And when you connect the dots, it's very powerful.
Yes, I agree with you. And they really, their noses were so out of joint over that, Catherine. You deserve 100% of the credit for that one.
And, I wish I could have had a video of that.
Yes. Yeah, you would have loved it. And anyway, they've been really kind of dirty trick artists to the Merck people and the drugs for animals people. But that's, you know, kind of goes with the territory. But, you know, I'm not there at these meetings. NHF isn't there at the meeting to be winning a popularity contest. We're there to get results. And like you said, you know, sometimes we can't stop something, but we can certainly delay it. But in other cases, we've been quite victorious. We got aluminum, thanks to the EU also, the EU delegation. We got aluminum out of as a food additive removed from 3/4 of the foods.
Not that's 100%, fabulous, because aluminum is terrible.
It absolutely is.
Right.
And I still remember this day having knockdown, drag out arguments with the Grocers Association that was an INGO there. And they were claiming, we need to have aluminum in there as a free flowing agent. And I said, and they said, and if we don't have it, the manufacturing equipment could catch fire and burn. And I said, look, you know, these guys with all their, when it was my turn to talk, these guys with all their money and scientists on staff, if they can't figure out that problem, then we're all in trouble. And, you know, this is like the least problem that we face on this issue.
Okay. And, so I just have to stop you because I want you to show the magazines. Coming into the end of 2019, you knew, you've spent years fighting this push for central control of health and central control of the food supply. You've done a lot with injections, and you knew you were part of that effort in Italy in 2017 when they discovered there's mammoth amounts of mysterious ingredients and all this stuff that they're putting into our bodies. So you're somebody who's unbelievably knowledgeable. And the first thing that happens is we start to hear about COVID. You just know this is yaya.
Yes, absolutely.
And you did not equivocate. I want you to show the two magazine covers because you did not equivocate at all.
We didn't. And it was a very kind of a risky position to take at the time because we didn't know all of the arguments that would be thrown against us out there. But we put it out there. And this is the issue of Health Freedom News. If you're a member,
the only thing you have to fear is fear itself.
Yes. And it was written by a wonderful guy, no longer with us, named Bill Sardi. And when I saw that article, I said, Bill, I've got to put it in the magazine. That's our position. And, you know, getting up here a little bit, maybe you can see that talks about the risk of death. And the risk was so, even though we calculated it, actually, he calculated it out, and it was so minuscule, it was ridiculous to even be worried about this COVID virus. And so we came out with this. This is the winter 2019. It was sent out to our members and made available to the public in January 2020. And then what happened is, as the story developed, then I wrote the next article for our spring 2020 issue. And I called it, I don't know, it's kind of a big title.
Never has so little done so much harm to so many. The latest coronavirus attack is a cover for restricting our health freedoms.
Yes.
Fabulous.
We came out with this in the spring of 2020, and it's a very long article that I wrote and talks about the mortality rate scam, how they're claiming it was more dangerous. It talks about that there's no accurate test for it. We talk about no accurate test. We actually propose that it's a bioweapon gotten loose, and that the current government actions are backfiring once again. And then we even raise the issue, are vaccines an answer? And we, of course, say no. But this was one of the graphics I put in there, which is the first thing to fight the virus is throw out your TV. Yeah, throw out your TV. And then we talk about what is the real killer here. And we're talking about the lockdowns and the proposed lockdowns at that stage and the vaccine. And what is the real goal? And we go into that. It talks about a lot about what you talked about, actually, Catherine. Maybe you deserve a little credit for influencing me on this. But we talk about how it's a cover for the crash of the economy and how they're using this and how they're going to use it to generate more cash out there. And then finally, I end up and say, you know, basically, remember, not everyone died on the Titanic.
Right.
And that was the basic message of the story too, was that, look, don't be afraid. You know, not everyone even died on the Titanic. So it's not that kind of situation. And then we came out in the summer because we were supporting the efforts of Mickey Willis when he was making his film, the Plandemic movie. And we actually are 501c3 sister organization made this, you know, helped to promote and fund this movie that Mickey Willis did that primarily starred in it Judy Mikovits, who's a wonderful woman and one of our recipients also, as you are, of our Health Freedom Hero Award. And anyway, so that's what we've done on that. And now we're facing a kind of it's not quite a bigger threat, but it's an equal threat. And that's with this disinformation governance board that, you know, the Department of Homeland Security secretary announced after the fact. They had already created it. He didn't announce that they were going to create it, but announced that they had already created it.
Right.
So we have some actions planned on that, which I don't
want to
go into here right now, but we are going to attack that vigorously. And because that cuts to the core of freedom of speech on this whole issue.
You can't have health freedom without freedom of speech.
Absolutely. And so we will be addressing that more in the future. But in the meantime, and before I forget, this week of May, we have a Codex meeting that I've been going to. It's a Zoom meeting, so I don't have to physically go to the Netherlands, but it's Dutch hosted. You know, you have countries who host the various committees. And in this case, it's the government of the Netherlands, and it's hosting the Codex Committee on Contaminants in Food. And that's where we had actually one of our biggest victories was getting melamine out of dry infant formula. And liquid infant formula as well. And that was back 2009, 2012. And anyway, so I've been attending that meeting this week, and it's they do it in a funny way now. Used to be you'd go to the host country or wherever the host country designated, and you'd meet in one big room. But since the 2020, they've been doing it by Zoom. And so it's kind of nice. You can just sit at home or in the office or whatever, and then Zoom in like we're doing here. And so we made the argument on this, which is just a health argument, not a health freedom argument. They're setting levels of mercury in fish, which is a laudable goal of Codex to do that. But of course, the industry wants the level to be as high as possible.
Right.
And the consumer groups, of which NHF is the only one there, and some of the member states like Egypt and the EU and a couple of other countries, they are opposing the higher levels. But we pointed out to them, look, the absolute level of mercury in fish is kind of irrelevant. It's what really counts is the ratio between the selenium in fish and the mercury, because what happens is the mercury binds with the selenium, the selenoenzymes actually, to keep them from functioning. That's why, and selenoenzymes are very important in your brain to protect the fats in your brain from oxidizing. Mm-hmm. And so that's what makes mercury, you know, the Mad Hatter's sort of syndrome, where they get crazy and stuff, is because the mercury is actually connecting with, they're like magnets. Just imagine two magnets together, and that's mercury and selenium. And so if you have more selenium than mercury, it's going to, the selenium's going to take out all the mercury. It won't affect you. Mm-hmm. If you have more mercury, so like tuna fish, as generally it has more selenium, a good deal more selenium than mercury. So you could have a whole bunch of mercury. It's not a problem, just as long as selenium's there to sop it up. Whereas like shark, mako shark, hammerhead shark, that kind of thing, they tend to have a lot more mercury than selenium, and that's very dangerous to eat unless you're taking supplemental selenium at the same time, which almost no one is, at least not, you know, like most of the world's population. So anyway, we were pointing that out to the meeting there, and we're the only ones to point it out. And I drafted a document. This is what they look like. Mm-hmm. And submitted it on Monday, last Monday. What are we today? Wednesday. And so I submitted this on behalf of NHF. And hopefully it has an impact, you know, because a lot of times we're just planting seeds with a lot of these delegates. So there's a chart that shows, it's actually on the Codex website. People can see this as, they call them conference room documents. So this is CRD conference room document 28, but I'm kind of getting into too much detail. But the
what it shows you is this is trench, you know, this requires years of work in the trenches,
yes,
to protect the food supply.
It does, because the way the standards advance is inch by inch, mm-hmm, and over the years, like the one setting the levels for vitamin and mineral supplements, actually not just supplements, but, you know, adding it into foods as well, was basically going on from about 2007 to 2015. So that's 8 years. And the reason it took 8 years is mainly because of NHF, is solely because of NHF, because they were advancing it where they were dumbing down the levels of supplements. And in 2009, in Dusseldorf, in November of 2009, I went there and I was able to stop it almost single-handedly. Iraq and India helped me. But other than that, it was me arguing for almost an hour against, again, the ultimate enemy, Australia, and others who wanted to lower it down. They wanted to lower vitamin C daily levels from 60 milligrams a day down to 45 milligrams a day. I mean, that's ridiculous. It should be going the other way. Right. They wanted to cut selenium levels. They wanted to cut most of the B complex, the B vitamin levels down by anywhere from 20 to 66%, except for the folate. They wanted to increase that a little bit. And vitamin D, they wanted to keep it a laughable, ridiculous level, and so on. So we fought that. And ultimately, we got it stopped. It was steamrolling ahead where Australia would get whatever it wanted, asked for. And then we were able to throw a monkey wrench into the wheels of that and stop it for about, that was 2009, for about 3 years until they figured a way around it.
So it's funny, one of the best health tips I ever found was in your magazine on vitamin D. It was. So, yeah, it was all about what happens if you don't have enough vitamin D. And I thought, that's what the problem is. So I suddenly started mega dosing vitamin D and, you know, was well in a week. It was great.
It's so good. It's important, too, to keep up your intake of vitamin K2 when you have higher intake.
I take liquid drops that are D and K together.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And usually there's a nice sort of combination, especially for keeping up your bone density and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's, high dose vitamin D3, vitamin K2, boron, at least 3 to 6 milligrams a day of boron. And of course, magnesium, either in the citrate form or the glycinate form, not the oxide form, which is very poorly absorbed. You know, you only absorb about 4% of the magnesium oxide. But in any event, you're doing the right thing, Catherine. I'm glad to see it. And you look good, too.
I'm reading NHF.
Never change. I think you have a picture, a portrait of you up in your attic that's getting older. Yeah.
No, okay. Oscar Wilde. No, I love Oscar Wilde, but that's not happening. So one thing I want, the topic of secret ingredients keeps coming up. And one of the most frightening interviews we ever did on the food series was Harry Blaser interviewed a professor, retired professor from Purdue, who talked about finding secret ingredients in the food that were completely unnatural. And he couldn't figure out what they were. And it sounded very much like all the interviews we get of the, you know, we've talked with some of the really good researchers who are trying to figure out what's in the COVID-19 injections. You know, and they're looking and they're taking pictures and they're like, we don't know what this is, you know, and it's clearly not disclosed.
Yeah.
So how much is secret ingredients a problem? We know secret ingredients are a problem in the injection, but how much are they a problem in the food supply?
Excellent question. And one that I can somewhat answer. I think it is a problem. A lot of times, they're, I would call them semi-secret ingredients because they'll use, like in the case of the European Union, the EU, they will use codes, you know, that are given by EFSA, the European Food Standards Agency. They'll issue an E code for something. So you may look at an ingredient list and looking to avoid taking aspartame. And you don't see aspartame in the ingredient list, but you see E178 or whatever it is. I'm sorry, I don't remember it offhand. And I just actually looked at it a few days ago. But you'll see an E number, and that's either aspartame, sucralose, a variation on the theme of aspartame, or some other secret ingredient. But it is declared, so they get away with it. It's just not declared in a way that most people, including even me, would recognize. And I do food and drug law. So, you know, if anyone should know, I should know. And even I don't know, keep up with all of these things. So they can try to sneak something by. But the general rule is if you see an E number, you really need to look it up and see what that is.
Right.
And so there are a lot of food additives and things like that. So getting back to your other thing about secret ingredients, I think it happens a lot. There's not a lot of monitoring of the food supply. I mean, they do it a lot for the small and medium producers, but right. The big corporate guys get to buy their way out of this, or they influence the inspectors or whatever. So generally, a good example of what happened with a secret ingredient was the melamine one, you know, back in the 2000s. I don't know if you want to go into that, but the Chinese industry sneaked it into dog and cat food, killed a whole bunch of dogs and cats because it's very toxic, and then later did it in infant formula. The babies were a bit tougher, so they not as many of them died as the dogs and cats, believe it or not. You'd think they wouldn't be tougher, but they were. Eventually it was found out, and the people were punished somewhat. But still, this goes on all the time.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening. Okay, so if there's one thing we've got to stop, it's a real deterioration at the Codex meeting. So what do we do to support you? How do we do something about this? How do we stop the central control of food, and how do we support you doing it?
Well, thank you. The best thing people could do is to join NHF or donate to NHF. Maybe I can hold this up and it gives our address.
Yeah, definitely.
And
Let me just read it. P.O. Box 688, Monrovia, California, 91017, USA. And your email address is contact-us@thenhf.com, which is your website address. And your phone number is 1-626-357-2181. And I just have to tell you, you want to join because you want to get the magazine.
Yes, really, that's one of the benefits. In fact, we don't have subscriptions. We have memberships. Yeah, and it's really only the members and the people who write articles in the issues who...
But I never read the magazine when I don't learn something new or get a great tip on health.
Well, it's thank always, you. That's quite
it's
a
phenomenally, phenomenally useful. It's
thank you. And what did I want to say about that? Recently we just moved the headquarters though from Southern California to Washington State. Mm-hmm. So the best thing to do might be to go to our website, thenhf.com, and to sign up as a member there. And also, when you sign up as a member, you get your own personal login, member login, and that allows you to see the electronic version of the magazine immediately when it's published. You don't even have to wait for it to arrive in the post. Of course, you know, I'm kind of old-fashioned. I like to have the actual issue in hand, and also it makes it tougher for censorship than, you know, having things online. So as even some other people have commented, I know Sayer G, former member of our board of governors, he kind of initially poo-pooed the idea of having print publication, but then when all the censorship started arising, he turned back to us, he said, you know what,
You guys were
smart, to keep printing and not give it up to the internet solely, at least. And
I want everybody, the next time you take a vitamin, next time you take a supplement, I want you to realize that Scott Tipps and his colleague are on the barricades protecting your right to do that. And if we don't support them, we might lose the right to do that. So
thank you for that. We've been... Honestly, right now we're low in donations. Our membership stayed stable, but we're low in donations, and so we're running a deficit. So we really need help, and for us to stay in there and keep doing what we're doing.
Well, I can't imagine what would happen if you went away.
We've been in existence since 1955. So what is that? Uh-huh. 67 years now. 67 and a half years, well, in a quarter. And we were the only game in town when it came to health freedom for about 40 of those years. And we were responsible for getting fluoride removed from many municipalities' public water supplies. We protected chiropractors, got them out from under the thumb of the AMA, and the acupuncturists, same thing. We did
that. I just have to tell you, there's that great movie on chiropractic. We had it in Let's Go to the Movies about how the chiropractors won. That was a mean, evil fight. That was a fight to the death, and the chiropractors won. So that was a good one.
It was a good one. It was a good fight. I haven't seen the movie, and I should.
Oh, you haven't? Scott Tips, you have to see that. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I'm kind of busy with Codex meetings, but okay. I'll take the time.
I promise you it's much more entertaining.
Okay, I'm sure you're right. Yes, you know, the Codex meetings really honestly are a lot like warfare, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of tedium and boredom interrupted by some moments of utter excitement and sheer terror, you know. So it's, you know, it can get heated at times, and then other times it just drags on. And
I know. It's
like
it's
watching paint peel or dry, you know. Yeah. So, but there's some good people there. It's not all bad. The thing to take away from this also is the FAO is more food oriented, so it tends to be friendlier to our viewpoint. The WHO is, the World Health Organization, is drug oriented. It's all about drugs, and they're the real bad guys. I'm not saying FAO's always great, but they're more likely to take our side on.
I think it's fair to say that WHO has completely lost their minds.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And to put them in charge of being able to declare a pandemic is insane. And to enforce that over all the other countries in the world, we're just looking for a disaster. I just saw...
No, we're looking for tyranny. We're looking for complete authoritarian... Yeah. It's just an excuse for complete authoritarian control.
Yeah, and we have to fight that. And if we don't fight it now... then when will we? It'll be too late.
Right.
So we're at a really critical crossroads here. It could go either way, and we need to make it go our way, the way of freedom. And that's just it. And that's why programs like yours, Catherine, are so completely, utterly important to get this word out to everyone. And so I really, really appreciate that you, you know, had me on again. And I hope, you know, it doesn't go another 11 years, but...
No, we'll be back. Okay. I think Codex is going to be a lot more exciting for the next couple of years.
Yeah, it will. Well, it will. I think, you know, people have to just realize that, you know, it's not... They can't wait for the light at the end of the tunnel. They have to create the light themselves. And that means going out, taking action, supporting others who are fighting for them. And that includes you and NHF. And they have to realize it's more important than getting an extra coffee latte at Starbucks or whatever. Just we can.
Yeah, especially because you have no idea what's in it.
Yeah, very true. Well, the secret ingredient thing, we at Codex, we come across some of that from time to time. It kind of surfaces, and someone might ask a question, what else is in there? And they, you know, are kind of hesitant to answer Merck or Monsanto, actually. And so it does, you do get, you know, some sort of idea of this happening undercurrent. It's just...
Something's wrong.
Yeah, something is definitely wrong. And so you really need to buy food from people you can trust and eat locally if you can. And
Scott Tips has chickens. You've got your own chickens, right?
I do. Chickens and ducks. And I'm very sad because I have so many ducks. I just gave away 5 of them today to a very good home. I don't give them away to people who are going to cut their heads off or anything. They just wanted duck eggs, which, by the way, are very healthy. And anyway, so it's very sad to see them go. But, you know, that's me. I get attached to animals and that sort of thing. But anyway, so you want to be self-sufficient.
Scott Tips, thank you for everything you're doing. We're in cahoots. And I just want to thank you for joining us on the Solaria Report and for everything you do. You have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you, Catherine. It's always a pleasure to be here with you in any form. Okay.
Keep me posted.
I will. Thanks.